Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Football Writers Podcast. My name is Mike Calvin. I'm joined by Tony Evans of The Independent and Dominic Fifield of The Guardian. It's never too early to panic in the Premier League. Watford have sacked Javi Garcia after four games. It's their 12th managerial change in 8 years. They've gone back to Quique Sanchez Flores, who described the owners as cold and pessimistic when he left the club 3 years ago. That was then, this is now. Sign of the times, Tony.
Well, it's a sign of Watford. I mean, because, you know, so as those statistics prove, this is what they do. You know, the turnover of managers is incredible. And there's normally a cycle that it's like, this manager's brilliant, he's doing really well. And then they level off, plateau to where they probably should be, have a little dip in form, gone. But there was rumblings of unhappiness at Vicarage Road, you know, at the end of last season. So I'm not entirely surprised that it's happened. But you know, at some point, they're going to get caught out by it and they're going to go down. The problem is they have such a turnover of players as well. I mean, in football, they always say, you know, if a manager stays too long, like the players sort of stop listening to him. They just become immune to him. So either change the managers or change the players. Watford do both.
It was interesting that the players supported Garcia, you know, and they were quite surprised to learn of it all via WhatsApp on Saturday afternoon. Do the players matter?
Well, their opinion of the coach, you
mean?
Probably not, but there's a specific model at work at Watford, and if this particular group, the bulk of these players are sort of vaguely consistent, you're looking at your Troy Deeneys and Ben Fosters, etc., through the side, and if that particular group responds well to changes in management, and as a rule they seem to for a while, and then as again Tony says, they hit a ceiling, then maybe that is the way that Watford, That is their strategy, and it is a strategy that's worked for the last, 6 years since they went up, 5 years since they went up. This goes back to the end of last season as well, actually. It's not just four games. We concentrate on that 4 games in, but the form towards the end of last season was pretty dismal, and it looked as if they'd hit that ceiling maybe in March time, possibly masked by the fine comeback in the semi-final against Wolves, which got them to Wembley for the final. Maybe it's just the limitations of the squad. That's what they are. They're a sort of 11th, 12th, 13th best team in the Premier League, and I suspect that by the end of this season they will still be 11th, 12th, or 13th with Quique Sanchez Flores having led them there.
But he's, you know, he'll come back into familiar territory. But over the last 15 months or so, he's been sacked by Espanyol. He lasted 7 months in Shanghai. Okay, as I said, he's coming back to somewhere that he knows, but what can he really intrinsically change? Because if you look at that squad, the one thing you always said about Watford is the recruitment is excellent. But if you look at that defence, the only incoming player was Craig Dawson, 29 years old. You give him a 4-year contract, which isn't their business plan normally. So have they got recruitment wrong?
Well, yeah, I think so. And one of these things about the clubs who do this, and Southampton, another example, is, you know, there's this, we've got our recruitment, it's brilliant, you know, and we can keep on sustain it forever. Actually, a lot of it's down to luck, and there is no genius there And eventually you're going to be found out. And they've kind of been found out this summer, I think. I don't think they've bought well enough. And I think they'll struggle a bit. And just going back to do the players matter, probably only they only matter when they think the same way as the ownership. When they're anti the manager, when they're in favour of the manager, then they don't matter.
Right. I'd just say that we've got to give the new players a bit of time. I mean, I think Ismaïla Sarr is a good signing potentially, and he could make a massive difference to them. But I mean, Gracia hasn't benefited from that signing at all because he's still finding his way into life in the Premier League. And I imagine if what he showed in France last season is to be believed, then come November, December time, they've got a real player on their hands.
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, with sacking someone after, you know, so few games, is especially foreign players, when they come in, they often talk about how long it takes them to get used to the physicality of the Premier League.
Yeah, it can be a season, couldn't it?
Yeah. You know, so... You know, as Dom said, they might have the recruitment right, but it's not going to show in the short term.
Yeah.
And by the time it shows, they might be in so much trouble that they're flailing about, and so you can't produce your best stuff because you're so desperate.
And the run of games they've got coming up is pretty horrible on paper, at least. I mean, you wonder whether it might bring a bit more out of the existing squad and the change in manager again, and the little upturn of results you sometimes get. But on paper, the next few run of games is pretty horrific.
Yeah, because it's interesting how they'll get on without Troy Deeney, who's out for a couple of months, and he's always been their talisman, hasn't he? They start or resume the Premier League at home to Arsenal on Sunday. If you look at Arsenal, do they know what their best midfield three is?
I suppose at this stage of the season, not. They've got the raw materials there to a certain extent. I think Guendouzi's obviously made progress and now graduated into the full French squad, and he was good against Spurs and the derby. Torreira's been a bit of a disappointment of late, to be honest. I thought he would be the sort of terrier that they needed in there, someone, a blur of tackles, whatever, but he hasn't really delivered it consistently. Maybe that's a lack of faith in the management, but again, I don't want to draw too many conclusions too early, because I just think he's a manager they have recruited, I mean, Pepe up front, and integrating him into the side with Lacazette, with Aubameyang, without Mkhitaryan. There's a balance they're having to find in that squad at the moment, to get the right selection out there, particularly for an away game like a match at Vicarage Road. I mean, they're not going to play those three up top at Vicarage Road, I wouldn't have thought. So, in which case, you might get a bit more steel in midfield.
I was there for the Tottenham game as Arsenal. I couldn't believe the way he set up that midfield. You know, Torreira out wide on the right. And, you know...
Xhaka is just a disaster way to happen.
Yeah, I mean, Xhaka, you know, he's a yard too slow. So he's late to the ball all the time. You know, it's a 50-50 ball. It's a yellow card. And yet you'd think Torreira would be perfect for the holding role. He's not quite mobile enough, and he doesn't have the radius of... Well, obviously, he's not going to be like Kante, but I was thinking more of someone like Haman, you know, Dizzy Haman, you know, sort of. He hasn't got the radius, so, he can't cover enough of the field. But he is a good tackler. He's marginalised there out on the right, and he certainly wasn't giving Maitland-Niles any protection, if that's what he was supposed to be doing. And also, when out there, he can't niggle and he can't moan in the referee's ear, which is two biggest talents.
Yeah. Where does Ozil fit in all this? Or does he fit?
I don't think he does. I really don't think he does. But unfortunately, with Mesut Ozil, there's no means of getting him off the books, really, unless they're going to pay such a massive proportion of their wages. It's hardly worth it.
Do a sort of a Sanchez number.
Yeah, I mean, we'll always go back to the decisions made in that transfer window, both by Arsenal in offering him new terms, and also by Manchester United in taking Alexis Sanchez. They're both those clubs are regretting those decisions. I don't see how he fits in. I think if you can, in home games in particular, you play that front three that we saw against Spurs, and there's a lot of potential in Pepe in particular, and Aubameyang and Lacazette are the envy of a lot of clubs in the division. But I don't think you can play those three and Ozil, because it makes it too lightweight.
Arsenal back into third place this year. You know, despite having an incoherent midfield, having a defence that'll be, you know, sort of at times laughable because that front three will score. But Ozil, you know what I'm like? If you get me started on Ozil, you so much want him to be brilliant because he's got everything, absolutely everything, except what you really need to be a superstar mentality. You know, the play stream is on these computer games where all the kids love him, and, you know, and his avatar can perform all these tricks. you know, it's a...
Well, at 350 grand a week?
Yeah. And, you know, and he can stay at home and play the computer game that he plays all the time. Just, honestly, it frustrates me when you see so much talent. I mean, you know, if he had, you know, a tenth of the application, say someone like, you know, Alan Shearer had in his game, then he'd be the greatest player in the world, without a doubt.
Mm. Talking of Shearer and Newcastle, and let's not talk about Michael Owen, but let's talk about Newcastle. You know, you talked about Watford having a difficult run. Newcastle start a really hard four-match sequence against Liverpool. What do you make of what's been going on up there?
Well, it's all eminently predictable. I mean, they're actually in a better position now than they were this time last year. But it is a bit masked by that fantastic, if improbable, win at Tottenham Hotspur.
Is that looking like an anomaly now?
Well, who knows? I mean, look, they did really well to exploit early season stodginess at Spurs, and that's to be praised. But it did paper over cracks. I mean, we all know there are issues at Newcastle. It always boils down to the ownership. You're never going to have a happy fan base. Steve Bruce is on a bit of a hiding to nothing. As soon as results go poorly, they're going to be back on his back because they see him as the owner's appointment, the owner's puppet, I guess. It's not quite Alan Pardew levels, but that is the reality of it. I just feel... It just sounds patronising to say you feel sorry for Newcastle fans, but I do, because I think they've been sold a pup on it all, and Ashley, he's just not going to get a buyer. I just don't see him leaving.
Mm. After Anfield, they've got Brighton, Leicester and Manchester United. Do you think there's a possibility they could be bottom by October?
Well, there is. I mean, I saw them at Tottenham, and I think the result reflected more on Tottenham than them. Mm. But to be fair to Steve Bruce, they were very, very well organised. They go into, so it's 9 men behind the ball all the time, and Joe Linton will be a, he'll score goals in this league. He holds up the ball up beautifully. He's got a nice touch. He's got a good shot. He's deceptive. He sort of lopes, and you think, oh, he isn't that quick, but he'll beat you to the ball. So I think he'll score goals, and I think he might well be the difference in keeping them up. And also, I like the name, proper name for a Newcastle centre forward, Joe Linton. You know, it's
way too. I mean, I keep going back. This is too early to judge, but actually, great win at Tottenham. And they recovered from being a goal down to the bottom club at home and got a point from that match. Probably should have merited more in the latter stages. I don't think it is all doom and gloom. And to be honest, even if they are in the bottom one or two, three come the end of October, we've seen before that teams can be in that sort of apparently hopeless position at that stage of the season and finish comfortably in mid-table. And there is enough quality in that squad to get them back into mid-table. I mean, they finished 10th two seasons ago, 13th last season, and they were appreciably clear of the bottom three come the end of the season. This will be the test as to whether that was down to Rafa's management, but I still think they've got enough quality over time to wedge themselves clear.
Mm. I don't really want to go too strongly on, you know, old ground, but you know Rafa well. Mm. You know, the charge from Ashley and his acolytes was that he just went to China for the money. Knowing him that well, is that right?
No, he would have stayed at Newcastle had they sort of given him sort of guarantees about spend, and you know, I mean, I've never met a man who was less concerned about money. Obviously, you know, when they come along and they offer you 25 million, you know, net over 2 years, I mean, then you'll think about going to China. If the money wasn't that big, he probably wouldn't have gone to China. He would have sat tight. But he didn't leave Newcastle for the money. He left because he saw it as being... He wants to win things, and it wasn't going to happen at Newcastle. And there were no other good jobs on the horizon as far as he could see. So he thought, I'll go to China. I'll earn a few quid. And when he comes back, he'll hope he can get a job where he's got a chance of success.
Mm. With Liverpool, Dom, will they win a lot this season in terms of titles?
Yeah, I predicted they'd finish second again behind City, but I think Laporte's injury actually makes a big difference in the title race potentially. And I think there's a there's an opportunity there for Liverpool now to really forge ahead and maybe City slip up, not by losing games probably, but by drawing the odd match. There's such momentum behind Liverpool at the moment, and I can sort of see why they might this year just slightly target the Premier League slightly. I mean, the proof in the pudding will be when the Champions League group games kick in and selections around those matches. But there's just so much going for them at present. It's such a good quality of squad, and yeah, let's reassess it come the end of December and see whether they might have benefited from the addition of maybe one player just to sort of spruce things up a bit in the summer, just to add a bit of competition to places again. But when you look at it at the moment as it stands, with the injuries that City have accumulated, in particular Laporte, there is more going for Liverpool at the moment than maybe for City.
Mm. Yeah, if you look at Trent Alexander-Arnold, he's almost like the symbol of the new Liverpool, you know, face on a mural, side of the house, all that sort of stuff. Named in the FIFA Pro Team of the Year, only two English defenders in that group, him and Carl Walker. There's a buck coming here. Where does he need to improve to actually really fulfil himself as an outstanding all-round fullback?
Well, I think he needs to defend a little bit better. I mean, too often he's relying on his pace to get him out of trouble. Mind you, you know, Ashley Cole did that an awful lot, and, you know, he was certainly the only one of the golden generation who was really, in, you know, sort of at the very top class, if you ask me. So he needs to do that. His passing's fairly good, his crossing's great. His positional awareness, he can improve that as well. But that's that has developed over the past, you know, sort of 18 months. And I think it's, you know, his decision-making. You know, I don't think there's a player out there who couldn't improve that. But, yeah, mainly his defending. But the way they're playing at the moment, you know, he's not put under that much pressure. And let's be fair, you know, so over the past 18 months, teams have targeted him. And he's come out of it in reasonable shape. So I think he's, you know, if he carries on developing as he is, I think he'll have the opportunity to become a real top-class full-back, or there's the potential of moving him into midfield. The problem for Liverpool this season is if injuries kick in, God forbid that Van Dijk gets injured, the front three, there's not really adequate. The only area where there's probably enough bodies to bring a title challenge is the midfield, and that's the area which Klopp is probably least sure about. It's the area which is probably the least satisfactory. You know, the defence picks itself, the front three pick themselves, the midfield have a lottery.
You need someone like Keita to come through, don't you?
Yeah, but the second season, so let's see how he kicks on. I'm sure he will. I mean, the ingredients are there, as I say. It's just a matter of, they'll all get game time. They've got so many matches coming up. Then they play every midweek until January or something.
Yeah.
On in. I mean, it's insane the number of games they're going to have. On Trent, all those things that we expect him to improve upon, that will improve with games. And we forget that he's relatively early in his development as a player yet, and it's phenomenal the progress he's made already.
The telling time will come with the World Club Championship. I mean, they really don't need that if they're going to put a title challenge in. And, you know, the period from November through till early January, I think that's when we'll know whether they can do it, because I suspect that's where the injuries will come.
Mm-hmm. If you look at distractions, you know, the World Club Championship is one. In a sense, very early in the season, the Europa League is another. Burnley found that to their disadvantage last year. Are Wolves being handicapped by the same problem?
Yeah, to a certain extent. It's a bit strange that often these teams in the Europa League, because they're playing so many games at this time of the season and they played all the qualifying matches, they're already in a rhythm, and that's actually when they do quite well. It's usually later on in the season where it catches up on them, and they start dropping like flies because they're all knackered. And in that respect, it's a bit surprising that Wolves haven't picked up that first league win yet. But they've still got a lot of quality there in the squad. And they've got the capacity to go out and spend big in January if they need to. So I'm sure that Nuno would like more options in there. It's funny that he reverts back to his tried and trusted rather than the new signings. But I guess that's just them adapting to new surroundings. I mean, their best spell at Goodison Park was when it was last season's team again on the pitch. And they were a real threat then, and rightly and justifiably got level for the second time. I think it was 2-2 at that stage. But it will be a test. But, you know, as you say, that is the routine. That is what happens for clubs of that ilk. I mean, they're better resourced than Burnley were to compete, but Burnley didn't get into the group stages. Burnley had basically gone, weren't involved from this moment on, were they? So, I mean, it'll be a test of the depth of quality that Wolves have got.
They're playing Chelsea in the resumption. Mm. You know, lots of hosannas for Frank Lampard, understandably, you know, very popular amongst the fans and actually, you know, the media. What are the limitations of the experiment that's going on at Chelsea at the moment?
Well, for me, the main limitation is the players they've got aren't good enough to be where they think they should be. You know, I saw them against Sheffield United, and they were 2-0 up at half-time. But there was a moment about, I'd say, 35 minutes into the game, where all the Sheffield United players sort of looked at each other and went, hang on, these aren't that good. And there was like, you know, sort of, obviously, when they come out after half-time, they scored almost immediately. But the fight back started earlier, and even though they conceded another goal, you could see the belief coming into them. I mean, the players that, I mean, Kurt Zouma was had a nightmare. You know, his injury really held him back, and you wonder whether he's going to ever become the player that, you know, they thought he'd become. As well as that, you know, he's got inexperience all around him. You know, when he was playing, you know, with John Terry, then you have a chance to develop. You know, it's a different matter when you're the person everyone's looking to. I mean, Mason Mount, everyone raves about Mason Mount. I wonder whether he's got the strength to play in the Premier League. He had real problems getting on the ball. And, you know, and I think these are the issues. I mean, when Kante comes back, he'll solve a lot of the problems, and they do have, you know, players injured to come back. But I think overall the squad's a bit lightweight and a bit weak. It's going to be a really difficult season. But the one thing is, the bridge is behind Frank Lampard, and he'll be given time. And if ever there was a club that needed to reset the way they do things in regard to managers, it's Chelsea.
If you look at the younger players, Dom, Mount, Abraham have made their impact already. You've got Loftus-Cheek waiting to come back in from injury. You've got the same with Hudson-Odoi. Is there anything behind that even? That you would expect to come through into the team?
I guess you could put Tomori in there as well. He played against Sheffield United. I suspect that Lampard will look at the rest and think they're probably a bit too raw still for regular first team involvement. And in all honesty, they've still got quite a hefty number of bodies still, without going further into the 23s, or rather the 18s, at Chelsea. It's a few interesting little sound bites from Frank in this first month in charge. It was after the Leicester game, he actually brought up in his post-match press conference that he hadn't been, because of the transfer ban, he hadn't been able to bring in the players that he wanted to play the football that he wants to play, which was the first real indication that, although he is committed to blooding the youth, this is blooding too many of these players at once. And that, you know, you never win anything with kids, whatever, but it doesn't generally work when you throw loads in at any one time. One or two of them might do well, others will struggle. And we're not just talking about youth team players, we're talking about players that last season were out on loan, like Zouma, who there were clearly reservations at Chelsea as to whether they were good enough, and now Chelsea are reliant upon them. And that these unique circumstances around the transfer ban has created a unique scenario. And without Rudiger, without Kante in that team, they're gonna look rudderless at times.
Is there a sense then that he's almost buying a bit of time?
Yeah, absolutely. But he's acknowledged that from his appointment. He knows that there are exacting standards at the club. But I think I'm led to believe that he got the assurances from the board. Let's, you know, take that with a pinch of salt, I guess, given their previous record. But this is an exceptional time at that club. And until Chelsea go through a window where they can bring in players of a certain calibre to help the kids that they deem to be good enough, we can't really judge him fairly. I think it's going to be a difficult season for him. I agree with Tony. I think a lot of those players playing together in the team at this moment are not going to be good enough to achieve what Chelsea need them to achieve, which is qualifying for the Champions League again. Bear in mind that a better squad than this struggled under Antonio Conte when they were playing Champions League group games a few seasons back. They finished fifth that season, which wasn't doing good enough, and he, with all the political machinations that he generated, he left at the end of that summer. So it's going to be a massive strain on a young and relatively inexperienced squad at Chelsea.
Mm. You mentioned Sheffield United, Tony. When they came up, they were accompanied by a lot of pretty ignorant assumptions that they'd be sort of a knock it, hack it, kick it type of team. Now, if you look at what Chris Wilder has presented, overlapping centre-backs, etc., etc., are they equipped to stay the distance as a surprise side of the season?
I'd be a little bit worried about them because, well, as I say, I've only seen them once this season. But they were wide open. They certainly never parked the bus. You know, they were looking to get forward as quickly as they could. And that was brilliant. I wonder whether they've got enough goals in them. And the two goals they conceded to Chelsea were absolute gifts. They were mistakes. So, I mean, if they can close that down, they could have come away from that game. Well, they should have won in the second half. They were better side. So, I mean, I think they need to tighten up at the back a bit. And they need to stop the individual or group mistakes. But I think they've got a good chance. There are more than three worse teams than them in the Premier League. And, and Wilder's not shy about letting them know when they do make mistakes. Mm. I mean, he's quite good after the Chelsea game. You know, he was like, oh, yeah, I told them at half-time, you know. It's not good enough, and they're having this. And you could tell he did in no uncertain terms, you know. You wouldn't like to be on the receiving end of it in the dressing room. So I think, yeah, they've got a good chance. I think the overlapping centre-half thing, I mean, I think it's probably a bit oversold. They do push up and get wide, but they're playing a three, and essentially they rotate round into a four when one of them pushes up. But I think eradicating mistakes and being a little less open in the midfield, goals are going to be a little bit of a problem for them, I think.
Mm. Let's look at some of the other promoted teams, Dom. Aston Villa. When you look at that team, do you see any hint of the influence of John Terry?
Well, I guess it's just interesting to know from Tyrone Mings whether Terry has helped his defending, because I saw them at Palace before the break, and they are solid. Engels has done well alongside Mings at the back. I like the sort of dynamism in midfield as well. That wasn't their best performance at Palace at all. They lack the energy that they're going to need to unsettle teams in the division. And I know there was a big furore about what happened at the end, but to be honest, if they'd got a point out of that game, it would have been a bit of a travesty because they weren't on it. They admitted as much post-match. So they're going to need the dynamism. They're going to need Grealish influencing games from midfield, McGinn, his energy in there, but I don't think those are things that John Terry brings. I think having John Terry at the club probably is a source of reassurance in terms of psychologically as well for the players to think we've got somebody who knows the Premier League sitting there on our bench, and you'd like to think he would have an influence in the defence, but again there's a lot of new faces sort of flung together there. And it's going to take a while for them to settle into some kind of rhythm, because they weren't impressive at Zellers Park.
Yeah, because Jack Grealish, who you mentioned, he can decorate a game, but can he decide a game?
I'm not so sure that he's as good as he's been sold. Like you said, he shows it in flashes, but he doesn't define the tempo of a match like the best players do. I think there's a little bit of wishful thinking in seeing him grow into a better player. I think we're probably seeing the best of him that there is. I could be wrong, I've been wrong many times before, but I think if everyone's pinning the hopes on him becoming a dominant midfield player in this division, I think they need to look elsewhere.
Mm. What about Norwich? Tony talked about Sheffield United needing to tighten up. I mean, that's a given, isn't it, for them?
Yeah, absolutely. But I think they'll beat a lot of teams at Carrow Road who around, you know, the teams that they're basically competing with to stay in the division. I think they'll give them a really good game. They were impressive going forward in spells at Anfield in the opening weekend. But yeah, there's a certain naivety there. There's a certain sticking to this philosophy because that's what we're good at and that's what we know. But I think come the second half of the season, if they haven't adjusted slightly to life at the higher level, then they could find that the teams they come up against are slightly more ruthless against them. But, you know, the way they dismantle Newcastle, if they do that to the teams that they're going to be competing directly against, they'll give themselves a chance of staying up, which is really what you'd expect them to do, given the level of investment there and the underlying principles of their project. If they finish 17th, that's pretty much a triumph.
I think, you know, what bothered me about them first day of the season, they come to Anfield and say, we're going to do this our way. We're going to play our way. And you're like, at times, you've got to adjust your game to the opposition's strengths, and
which,
they didn't.
Which they will they have to do on Saturday when they play Man City.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, if they go in and play their game, then they're going to get blown away. And, you know, everyone raves about the performance in the second half at Anfield. But frankly, Liverpool had given up. You know, that I think a couple of the players were already in town having a pint, you know, by the time Norwich got into the game. And so, you've got to understand your own strengths, but also your own weaknesses, and you've got to stop the opposition's strengths, and they haven't done that yet. Like Dom says, they will blow a lot of the sort of peer group away at Carrow Road, but a lot of people look at them, and by the time you get halfway through the season, will have seen them once, will know what they do, and will adjust to them. And if they don't adjust, they're in trouble.
Well, that's the nature of modern football, isn't it? They'll be analysed to death over this international break.
Same with Sheffield United as well. I mean, you often see with the promoted teams that come October time, teams have almost started to suss them out. I mean, Fulham last season hit a horrible run around this stage very, very early on, but that effectively condemned them to relegation because they never really recovered from that. And that happens, and you have to be able to adapt, and which is why when you hear a manager coming up saying, well, we're just going to stick to our principles, this is what we're going to do, alarm bells sort of ring as well.
Yeah, but if you look at the backroom operations there, you know, read a very good interview recently with you know, the head of performance, where basically they're saying our players don't have a day off after the game. That's the key day and opportunity to actually get things right. And the one thing that strikes me about Norwich is that they maximise what they've got. It's a very intelligent operation, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'll agree with that. But sometimes you've got to look at minimising what the opposition have, their strengths, and you've got to get that balance. And, you know, I mean, I think they'll probably stay up. They've got a goal scorer. And, you know, that always makes a difference down at the bottom. But I think they'll be on the receiving end of some spankings unless they tighten up.
So if we're being relatively optimistic about the promoted teams, who's banging trouble then? Which familiar figures?
Well, it'd be interesting to see how Watford recover from their start and how the new management works. I think we'll see the usual suspects down there. I think Newcastle will have spells when they look in trouble. But I think they'll probably pull away. You know, you could argue that Palace are in a false position, well, very much in a false position, but they will be, they'll probably have enough to get into mid-table as well. I actually think that it'll come back. I mean, Brighton, how good are they? A great start, but, you know, the issues that were a problem last year, probably still an issue now. You know, what happens to them if a Lewis Dunk goes down injured? It'll settle out, but I suspect that it won't. I don't think there'll be a surprise in there. I don't think you're going to see a particularly well-established side really dropping out of the division. I'd be surprised if a team that's been there for 4 or 5 years suddenly slips out of the Premier League this season.
Because if you look at, I suppose, Burnley, the object lesson and how to, you know, adapt. Bournemouth.
Well, I think Bournemouth might be closer to the relegation fight than, you know, than I suppose most people think. you know, they sort of go under the radar most of the year. No one pays much attention to them because, you know, they'll pick up a few points and they'll be fine. But you just wonder whether things are getting a bit stale there for Eddie Howe. You know, maybe he should have moved on. They look a team that you can score goals against. They look to me like a bit of a soft touch. Haven't said that. Haven't seen them this season.
I like their front line, though. I mean, they're a deceptively... They're a big and strong team and a difficult team. A lot of pace in there. I mean, I looked across their front line against City. I was covering that match. And, you know, when Wilson's running at people, when King's running at people, when Fraser on the far side is scuttling at people, and they've got drive there. They've also got players to come back in who are injured at present. I agree with you about the defence, and it can look a bit creaky at times, but I like Nathan Ake. Ake's a threat in both in the opposition box as well. He's a real pain at set pieces, and I just feel as if they've probably got enough energy and underlying quality to steer clear. I'm conscious that I've basically said that no one's going to go down now, but I just think that they've got enough about them. They've also got a nastiness about them they've always retained since Eddie Howe brought them back up. They're not a nice team to play against. They've got a bit of needle in there as well.
Yeah. Have you got to, let's take Palace as an example. Have you got to have readily definable qualities? You know what you're going to get with Palace in terms of defensive organisation. That's been the hallmark of Roy Hodgson since he was a boy, basically. He's 72 now. Mm. Is this his last season?
I suspect it probably will be. He's out of contract come next summer. And it's interesting that when asked about it recently, Steve Parrish was slightly non-committal as to what was going to happen. It's all going to be sort of dealt with by the club. And, with vested interest in this one, I'm a notoriously pessimistic Crystal Palace supporter, but I don't actually think that Palace will be in trouble this season, even with their lack of a goal-scoring striker, because I still think they'll go out in January and bring one of those in. Hodgson will just get them organised. They've got the best defensive record in the Premier League at the moment, which is pretty ridiculous considering they've already been...
Cahill, a good signing.
Yeah, he's an excellent signing. He's absolutely excellent. You look at him playing for Palace and you see a player that's won everything that he's won. And he just brings a bit of... now some know-how to it all. And they've actually got, with him, Tonkins, Sacco, Dan and Kelly, they've actually got five really good centre-backs. There's an argument that whether they needed Gary Cahill at all, but actually I think he's actually added to their results at the moment. The problems with Palace are going to be, trying to get consistent performances out of an unsettled Wilfred Zaha and a striker.
And the thing is as well, when they play, everything goes through Zaha. The opposition can double up, they can triple up on him because...
Which actually makes the performance... To win at Old Trafford, where Zaha didn't have the greatest of the game, and to beat Aston Villa, where Zaha didn't have the greatest of the game, more encouraging. Because, I mean, I'd never thought I'd say this, but Jordan Ayew suddenly looks a player. Mm. I mean, let's revisit that in 3 months' time. Yeah, but at the moment...
Well, he should do because, the other attackers get so much space.
Yeah,
because, you can see Zaha's frustration a couple of times last year, in particular the Wolves game. Wolves got, sort of, they got at least two men close to him, and they give him a whack every time he got the ball. Mm-hmm. And Palace's creativity sort of just faded.
They're at Tottenham at the weekend. Mm. I thought it was the very interesting line from Hugo Lloris, where he basically admitted there's something missing here. What is that?
Belief in the manager. There's a lot of unhappiness behind the scenes. They can't understand. Some of the senior players can't understand the teams that have been picked. The way Pochettino operates. I think what's really interesting, if you look back, after Kiev, Liverpool got beat by Real Madrid. The mood around Melwood and around Anfield was, that's not going to happen to us again. We're not going to be embarrassed like that again. Mm. The mood of Tottenham has been very, very different this summer. It's been very, very downbeat. And they don't understand why Davinson Sanchez has been playing in that position, certainly at centre-half. I didn't think I thought it was a big gamble to play him as well, at full-back against Arsenal.
Nothing,
and it should have been, Arsenal should have exploited that more. Mm. There is, I think, for a team that when they sort of started developing under Pochettino, everyone bought into what he was trying to do. There's quite a few of them who are not having it now. And I think that's the main thing. And he actually said after the Newcastle game, when he was talking about team spirit, he said, you've got to have off the pitch the right spirit and the right belief. He said, we haven't got that now. And you can actually see it during games. You can see that they're not buying into it. And you need to pull them round as a group.
Mm. Talking of groups, I've been very impressed with the way that Brendan Rodgers has come in and galvanised Leicester. Mm. They've arguably had the best start of the season. What's your impression of them, Dom?
Yeah, I've been really impressed. I saw them at Chelsea. They were excellent in the second half in particular. There's just the timing seems perfect for Brendan Rodgers to take over. A lot of very, very good young players there. The likes of Chilwell, Chowdhury, whatever. They've got Madison, obviously. A lot of good players coming through collectively at the same time. At the moment, they don't look as if they're missing Harry Maguire. I suspect that in time they probably will miss him. But it just sort of feels like they're all coming together at the right time. Of all the teams that are sort of emerging from the pack that might challenge that established top four or five, they're the ones that I look at and think, oof, they could do it. They could do it. And that you'd imagine that they also have got resources in January to go out and spend if they're in a position where they feel they can kick on and get into a Champions League place with all the Maguire money in the bank. It just feels like the right fit. Good attacking players. He's got the best out of Jamie Vardy since he's been there, and we know how key he is to everything that Leicester do going forward. It just feels right.
Mm. You obviously saw a lot of Rodgers at Liverpool. What were the flaws which were exposed then, and have those flaws been eradicated?
Well, his flaws were, the main flaw on the pitch was the deep defence, not getting them organised. And again, we talk about playing in one style, going forward, not adapting, depending on your opposition. And he did that. I think he's changed. I think in that, his experience in Scotland has helped a little bit. I think he'll be much more pragmatic than he was at Liverpool. But the biggest issue he had is the way he dealt with players. Players didn't feel that he was honest with them. And it's fine in the honeymoon period. Mm. It's fine when you're winning. But when things go wrong, the players always look for excuses and they always point the fingers at the manager. So unless he's learned that the best way to deal with the squad is to be absolutely, totally and brutally frank with them, then don't leave yourself open to any misinterpretation. The cracks will appear again. They did at Celtic.
Mm. Manchester United resume at home to Leicester. Will that tell us a lot about both teams?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, yeah. I mean, I think both teams' position at the moment is a fair reflection of where the clubs are going. It feels as if Leicester are on a riding high and will play against United with huge confidence. And United just feel fragile at the moment. There's too many sort of grumbling issues there, and it's unsettling. There's also a presumption, really, that United would challenge this season. I don't see really what the basis of that was. They've bought excellent young potential in Wan-Bissaka and James, and those guys are going to be great for them. But they may not fire consistently this year, and it's dangerous to sort of build we're going to kick on when you've just signed players who are at the start of their careers. Maguire. Yeah, he settled in well and we all got a bit carried away with that first performance. But I think the underlying issues are still there. They don't look as though they've got a natural goal scorer, particularly in the ranks. I'm Lindelof, suddenly his reputation seemed to soar after a few good performances. But look, come on, he was the same. He was a player that people were criticising, 12 months ago, 18 months ago.
What about Rashford, Tony? He's praised by Gareth Southgate after that, very typically and predictably facile win over Bulgaria. He needs to step up and take responsibility, doesn't he?
Well, he does, and Southgate plays him out wide, and he barely got into the box. So how are you going to score goals from there? And United have not really given him a a coherent position over the years. I think someone makes a decision, needs to make a decision. Where is he? Is he a winger, or is he someone who needs to get in the box and score goals? And I think he's best utilized maybe in sort of the inside, the inside forward position, so he can drive in, because he's got a lot about him. I do wonder, is he clinical enough? He tends to shoot towards the centre of the goal. I mean, there are players who find the corner all the time. Rashford hits the target a lot, but in areas where the keeper can make saves.
Let's finish, if we may, with a quick look at the opening weekend of the Women's Super League. 31,000 at the Etihad for the Manchester Derby, 25,000 at Chelsea against Tottenham. What are your impressions of that opening salvo, as it were?
The numbers are impressive, aren't they? I mean, I think that's an excellent start. And I think in terms of media, if I stick to that, I thought they got a lot of coverage, which is really positive. But it's, again, it'll always boil down to how you build on it and momentum through the season. And, are these clubs going to be playing a lot of games in at the Etihad and Stamford Bridge and places like that, where they can bring in these fantastic crowds? It's promising. It's a good start. And I thought there was real momentum behind it this weekend, but it's about sustaining that when you've got a full Premier League programme, running concurrently with that, and that'll be where the difficulty lies.
You agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the headline numbers are superb, but it's what you've got to do is look how this is going forward, and a lot of those tickets at both games were either reduced rates or given away free, and so you attract people. Whether they will come back is another thing. I think the main thing about the women's game is you've got to make that intellectual leap and say it's not like the Premier League. It's not 100 miles an hour. It's not as physical.
Technically, it's really good.
Well, that's why I quite enjoy it, because you get players who can pass, who can control the ball, and it's not compete for the first ball, win the second ball like the Premier League is so often. So it slows everything down. Unfortunately, it's like the Premier League, to a certain extent, is like fast food. Everything's 90 miles an hour. It's all sugar rush. We're all like that. It's nice to see football slowed down.
Yeah. Well, something is stirring. To adapt that old baseball line, build women's football around the biggest stadiums and they will come. Thanks for joining us here on the Football Writers Podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.